This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
So they say that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. But with our second Prime Minister, Tun Abdul Razak, and his son, the sixth Prime Minister of Malaysia, Dato' Sri Najib Razak, many feel the apple has indeed fallen far from the tree. But is it fair that the legacy of one of Malaysia's forefathers should suffer because of the alleged sins of his son? Have the alleged misdeeds of Najib Razak in any way affected Tun Razak's brand and how we view him as a leader? And if the perception of Tun Razak has changed, is it possible to reverse that change and restore the rakyat's previous perception? This is Resource Centre with Audrey Raj, and I am on the phone with one of our regulars, Dr. Rosan Othman, and we're about to analyse the Razak brand to discuss the long-term effects of the recent scandals on one of Malaysia's most historic families.
Okay, hello, I'm Rosan Othman. I'm a partner at Human Capital Development in Sdn Bhd. We are a management consulting firm, especially in change management and leadership development.
Dr. Rosan, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show with us. Thank you for doing this with us at such short notice. So it's the story that has gripped the nation and international media, a multi-billion ringgit corruption scandal, alleged misappropriation of funds, all involving the former leader of our country. It's a lot to take in, isn't it, to digest and just to adjust to?
Oh, yes. I think we've got used to the whole idea of our leaders being people of higher integrity. And I think in many ways, Malaysians tend to have a high level of respect for their leaders. And I think this is reflective in the way, for instance, how we flock to the open houses during Hari Raya.
Yeah.
This is in contrast in some countries where people tend to always be cynical of their leaders, tend to be very critical of their leaders. So I think this episode marks an important incident in terms of looking at how leaders have to tread more carefully with their status and the position that's accorded to them.
And with all this attention on Dato' Sri Najib Razak, people are also beginning to discuss just how different he is from his father, one of the founding fathers of Malaysia, Tun Abdul Razak. Is it fair that the legacy of one of Malaysia's forefathers should be dragged into a discussion of current times just because of the alleged sins of his son?
I think history has basically, the history on Tun Razak has basically been written and the ink has dried. We've very much sort of positioned him as one of the great statesmen of this country, and there is no reason why what his offspring or any other members of his family does should affect his image. I think his contributions will remain as something that we will remember as having a unique role in the history of this country, and that will endure.
What would you say was the image that people had of Tun Razak previous to the present happenings?
Okay, I think I like to use an analogy. If you go back to the history of the Mahathir and Anwar Ibrahim leadership way back in the 1990s, before 1998 at least, they were seen as basically two sides of the same coin. Mahathir was always seen as the leader who was more ambitious, associated with big projects like Proton, the KLCC and all that. Anwar was the one that was seen as being more associated with poverty eradication, low-cost housing, many of these projects that were associated with the concerns of the less privileged members of our society. And I think that same image was there as far as Tun Razak and Tunku Abdul Rahman is concerned. Tunku Abdul Rahman was seen as the somewhat carefree prime minister, and Tun Razak was the guy who was basically closely associated with projects that were linked to the development of the less privileged parts of our society. For instance, he was the minister who was very much responsible for Felda for almost, I think, 12 or 13 years.
Mm.
So he was seen as basically the father of Felda. He was also seen as instrumental in developing Mara. It was first established as Rida in the early days, and then later on changed to become Mara.
Yeah.
And with the NEP, which was also a creation of Tun Razak after the 1969 incident, we saw the emergence of the Malay middle class as a product of the education, the scholarship programs that was under Mara. So these were the things that became associated with Tun Razak. The image of the guy who basically stood for the less privileged members of society, and for the Malays in particular, it was seen as being the he was seen as basically the one who was instrumental in helping construct the Malay middle class.
Dr. Rosan, why do you think it's important even for individual politicians to have and uphold an image or their brand?
Okay, I think we have to understand one thing. Regardless of whether anyone constructs or attempts to build a brand image or a brand, a brand will emerge from the very behavior of the leader. The question is, do we construct it consciously? Do we try to create a positive image, or do we actually leave it to chance or to random events? Now, leaders have to be mindful in terms of the legitimacy of their leadership depends a lot on the followers' acceptance of their influence. Followers need to believe that the leaders stand for things that are close to their concerns, that reflects their interests. And because of that, the leaders cannot be too far off from their subordinates.
Too out of touch,
and being too aloof from their followers. Now, related to that is, of course, when you're talking about building a brand image, we have to remember that leadership, the brand image that you create in leadership has to be based on the personal values of the leaders. What does he believe in? You cannot just build a leadership brand that is based on impression management. We've seen a good example of a leader who was so out of touch, had delusions of his own grandeur, was basically the Shah of Iran. He thought of himself as one of the descendants of the great Persian empress, created all kind of lavish celebrations, reviving many of the old traditions. But the problem was his country was still steeped in poverty. There were still many people outside the urban areas who were not part of the elite that were living in very poor conditions. So as a result, the people basically revolted against him. Now, I would like to quote this statement from Lynn Serafin, which I thought is interesting. She said that without values, leadership becomes tyranny. The fine line between becoming a good leader and a tyrant, that there is a fine line that differentiates between good leaders and a tyrant. Because tyrants become self-centered, they become concerned with themselves, they become narcissistic, and because of that, they make themselves at the center of their leadership process. Whereas leaders who lead with values will be guided by some higher ideals. And I think just last week, Datuk Sri Wan Azhar, the Deputy Prime Minister, mentioned about this whole notion of leaders needing to lead with conscience, be guided by their moral compass. Now, leaders, over time, we tend to associate these leaders with certain brand image that is reflective of their personal values.
What would you say are the values associated with the Razak brand, with the Tun Razak brand?
The Tun Razak brand, I would think it has a lot to do with, you have to remember, I think he had to basically balance many considerations. One is, of course, as the then president of UMNO and the post-independent Malaysia, the concern about the backwardness of the Malays was one of the things that was very important for him. And that's where you see, as I said, the Felda project, the Mara project. These became iconic institutions as far as the advancements of the Malays. But he also had to understand that he was also leaders of all Malaysians. And there is a story which I thought is interesting, which most people are not even aware of, which is the history of the formation of the Maktab Rendah Sains Mara project. Now, a few officers in Mara came up with the idea and went to the government to present the idea, and it was basically rejected. The interesting thing was that the only guy who saw merit in the idea was the then director of the EPU, which was Tan Sri Tsong, okay, who is not a Malay, who then took the idea to Tun Razak and argued for it and supported it. And because of that, Tun Razak finally agreed to support the idea. And it became a major project which is still continuing until today.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm sure very few of the students who came out from the MRSM system are even aware that without the support of this non-Malay director of EPU, the project would have not seen the light.
Right.
Now, what I thought was interesting was that this reflected the values of these two personalities, Tan Sri Tsong and Tun Razak. This took place after the 1969 tragedy. Tun Razak had no problem with working with a non-Malay. And Tan Sri Tsong had no problem fighting for a cause that was actually going to help the Malays, even though he's not a Malay. This, to me, incident reflects the ideal Malaysian that we would like to see, we need to see a lot more of these days. People who are able to keep their perspective in terms of looking at the bigger picture instead of being trapped by narrow racist sentiments and bigotry. And I think this is, I would salute the two of them for having actually made that move and being able to actually work together in creating this project.
We're taking a quick break now to get some messages in, but when we come back,
his legacy is rubbish. His legacy is shame and disgrace. It's a pity, you know. There's so much going for him.
That's up next. This is Resource Centre, BFM 89.9.
Building First World Mindsets, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to Resource Centre with me, Audrey Raj. We are discussing the Razak brand today, the Tun Abdul Razak brand, that is, and a little bit of the Najib Razak brand as well. And we're doing this with Dr. Rozhan Othman from Human Capital.
His legacy is rubbish. His legacy is shame and disgrace. It's a pity, you know. There's so much going for him. We thought that he was more energetic, more forward-looking, visionary, blah, blah, blah. But clearly, as we went down over the years, it didn't turn out to be like that. It turned out to be a great disappointment. And when you have scandal after scandal after scandal, that couldn't be explained. And scandals that actually pointed out to greed, avarice, wanting to use money for power, you know, and not really governing seriously and governing by slogans. You can't govern by slogans. You can't govern by consultancies.
The voice you just heard earlier is the undeniable firecracker that is former International Trade and Industry Minister Tan Sri Rafida Aziz. She was on The Breakfast Grill earlier this May and was asked a question about Datuk Sri Najib Razak's legacy. Here's another excerpt from that interview.
I worked with his father. As I worked with Tun Hussein, I came into government with Tun Hussein. His father made me senator at age 30. And I was in the Supreme Council of his father, right? That was way back in 75. My God, they're so different. Not like father, like son at all. And I wouldn't say that he tarnished his father's reputation and so on. His father's good legacy will remain. His legacy is separate. I don't even want to make comparison. It's not fair. Bringing in the name of Razak in the same breath as Najib. He created his own legacy, and that should be remain that way. You know, it's a pity that you have to talk, oh, his father's legacy. Many people do not even know his father, right? They were not born yet at that time. So I would like to say his father left a legacy that we should all be proud of because he started the development process right after Tengku Abdul Rahman. And his son, by the time he took over, made a mess of it.
So many agree that Tun Razza and Najib Razza were very different in their leadership style and ways. But is there a difference between how one handles a personal or familial brand as opposed to a corporate or official brand?
It's not always so straightforward, because sometimes, especially in politics, the way the leader behaves as a national leader cannot be too different from how they behave in their personal life. I mean, let's take another example. Let's say Nelson Mandela. The things that he speaks about peaceful transition of society, are not just things that he talk as a matter of expedience. It's something that he really believes in. He lives it in his personal life. And I can say, based from what I'm familiar, these values were also there in the case of Tun Razza. One example, I had a conversation recently with my father-in-law when he got to know of the allegations related to the 1MDB. And he was narrating to me a conversation that took place between Tun Razza and one of his sons.
Right.
As you may recall, the official residence of the Prime Minister then was at Sri Taman. And one of the sons actually told Tun Razza, or requested from their father, to build a swimming pool.
I've heard this story before. Yes, yes.
Yeah, and he said, I don't have any money to build a swimming pool, and this is the rakyat's money, so I cannot just spend it to build a swimming pool. So I think that sense of being accountable was there not only in his life as a political leader or a corporate, if you want to use the term corporate leader, but it was also reflected in his personal life.
So, Doctor, at the top of the show, you mentioned that the ink has dried on our perception of Tun Razza. When it comes to the present day and with social media and with the news, saying what reports are saying today, so you don't feel in any way it will affect the Razza brand as a whole?
As of now, I don't think so. The only thing that can change is if something is unearthed, for instance, by historians about what happened during his time, that may change our perception of his leadership. But as far as his status and as far as our view of him, I believe it will not change as much. And I think there's probably a bit of awareness among even those who are critical of his son about how different the son is from the father. The son basically undid some of the things that the father established.
So we're pretty clear with where we draw the line between Tun Razza and his son.
I believe so. Yeah, the fact that, you know, people are talking about the son being so different from the father is largely reflective of that awareness.
And if the perception of Tun Razza's brand does change, is it possible to reverse that change and restore the public's previous perception? And if so, how could the brand redeem itself?
Well, you see, for leaders who are no longer with us, it is very difficult to change the perception that they have, that others have of them, largely because they are not in the position to try to create counter-narratives or shift the narrative about themselves. The brand will be very much defined by those of us, especially historians, who seek to study them further. I mean, if we look at two characters in U.S. history, for instance, John F. Kennedy and Bill Clinton, I would say they are somewhat similar in the sense that they were all both Democrats, and both of them are associated with a scandal involving the M.
Yes.
Okay. The difference is that Kennedy was assassinated. Now, being assassinated elevates the status of Kennedy to a hero. And because of that, no matter what people discover or reveal about Kennedy, that status will not change very much. Because he is revered because of the fact that he seemed to have sacrificed himself. And generally, people are more interested to attack and criticize living leaders who have their skeletons being brought out from the closet.
It's a shame, though, that even after all these years, when we think of these former U.S. leaders, we still think of Marilyn and Monica.
Yep.
So that is attached to their brand no matter what, right?
Yes. But Kennedy had other credits to him. I think any student of leadership would know that the Kennedy leadership bench was associated with the success of managing the Cuban Missile Crisis, the Apollo program. Those were initiatives that were started during his time, the attempted invasion of Cuba. So there were many of these incidences that, you see, most people will sort of look at a person or a leader and look at them and say, imbalance, well, yeah, he's got some of these glitches in his character, but I'm willing to ignore this given that there are these other achievements.
And Doctor, just before we go, is there any hope of turning around this current perception the public or the rakyat have about Dato' Sri Najib Razak?
I think it's too early to decide on that, largely because we still do not know the full extent of the damage from the crisis. Even the full nature of the crisis and the scandals have not been revealed to the public. I think I would assume from what I've read so far, the consequence of this scandal is something that will be borne by not just our generation but also the next generation. And I think they may not be very forgiving of that. So it will not be easy.
But for now, innocent until proven guilty, correct?
Innocent until proven guilty, that's a legal maxim, but in the mind of public opinion...
And branding.
Yeah. I mean, products go down in terms of sales, regardless of whether there's any court ruling saying they are good or bad products, right?
Correct.
People make up their mind much faster than the legal process.
I've been speaking with Dr. Rozhan Othman from Human Capital on the Razak brand. For more Resource Center episodes on branding or leadership, go check out our podcast on the BFM website. Or better yet, just subscribe to the Resource Center podcast using the BFM app, available now on the App Store and on Google Play. My name is Audrey Raj. Thank you for listening to Resource Center on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.